Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Are you ready for your next winter adventure? Whether it's a stylish all-wheel drive SUV to get the family where they need to go, or an innovative EV to make the switch to electric, ChevyDriveChicago.com has you covered. With Equinox, Traverse, Silverado, Trax, and Trailblazer, you're sure to find the perfect Chevy to match your needs and lifestyle. But finding the right car is only part of the story. Winter weather is here, and your vehicle needs to be ready for anything. From oil changes and tire rotations to unexpected repairs, your local Chevy dealer is here to help. Their team of experts knows your vehicle, and they will make sure your car is safe, reliable, and ready to handle whatever the season brings. So why wait? Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today to find your local dealer, shop the latest vehicles, and schedule your service appointment. ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleam? Stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. Oh, the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. Hour number three already. No better way to start it off from old buddy Cliff Webb down in Corpus Christi. Cliff, what is going on down there?
Oh, well, I just thinking here, sitting here listening to your muscle car thing, and I got a solution for you. My neighbor's got a jacked up Pinto down here, and it'll bark the tires for you.
I'm good, man.
It's not no go, but we got a Pinto here that might work all right for you. You know, I was funny you said that because one of my buddies had a Pinto.
I wouldn't fit in there.
How about those Pacers with all that glass? That was another one my buddy had jacked. Yeah.
Ramblers, and Pacers.
Yeah. They jack them up and put a glass pack on them. They thought they had something. I thought that was great.
Yeah. What was that ugly one? The Gremlin. Boy, that was an ugly one.
Yeah.
AMC ugly, had some nasty looking cars back then.
Yeah, that's something, man. But I mean, it's been good, Mick. I've had just a great week on Big Trout. Man, I just had a good one, man. I froze to death. God, it's never been so cold in my life.
Cold?
God almighty.
You
know, I was talking to my... I'm getting old. I've been old.
You just wait. You got a few more years scheduled with me.
I've already caught up with your mileage. I get the mileage on the deal. You know, the odometer's rolling over.
You have abused yourself over the years, my friend.
Yeah, the odometer's rolled over a few times. But anyway, so I was talking to my Karen whining how cold I was. And he said, yeah, I was in Alaska, and it was like 30 below zero, and I was warmer than I was duck hunting in a 40 degrees with 100% humidity and a 20-mile north wind.
Right.
And it's true, man.
It is.
I'm fishing that fog and drizzle, and I got on everything I got in the house, and I'm still cold. But it's been a crazy fishing. You know, Monday we pull out, it's just drizzling, foggy, the worst weather you can possibly imagine. And the last time these guys fished with me, it was 91. And they, you know, so,
91. I'm surprised
91.
They're not dead by now.
I know, it's amazing. You know, they put on a little gray and lost a little hair. They look a little different than the pictures they did last time they fished with them.
Isn't that somehow that happens? Your hair kind of changes color.
Yeah, I look at the picture. Weight. I go, "That's us."
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, but anyway, we caught some studs that day. You know, we got out there, and it was one of those deals where I had the small window right at daylight to run under the fog and get to a spot, then just get blanketed, and you can't move. You can't move once you get there for hours because it's just so foggy you can't see the front of the boat. And you got to get in somewhere real tight on the shore. And every time you hear a boat, you walk up on the beach.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I've been fishing, just stupid crazy. But we walked out on Monday, and I think we stuck a 5.5 and a 6 the first hour, and some fours, and things were going really good. And I had a guy throwing a soft line, a pink silver that Mike had sent me, just to XL.
Right.
And he gets a thump, and this fish comes out of the water. I said, man, that is a stud. And that fish, I think I might have sent you a picture of that one.
That's a guy on. He had some Sims waders, gray hair, sunglasses,
and a red
jacket.
Yeah, that guy has been fishing.
Yeah, how big was that fish? The picture right when you took it, the tail curled back around, but it's got
another picture. Yeah, I'll send you a better picture. The picture was right at 8.5 pounds.
Oh, that's a beautiful fish, man.
30 and a half inches.
Purple back and all those spots. And that, man, look how white that fish is and the black tail.
Beautiful fish, man. And he came out of the water. He came out of the water half out and just shook for like 3 feet out of the water
when she
picked up that soft nine. But, you know, and we've caught so many, you know, high sixes, but only had one other one that was 7.5. So it's so funny how many 5 and 6.5 and 6.25 we caught. There were 28, 27 inches long to try to get those two. One was 7.5 and one was a little over 8. You know, that's 3 days of the same guys grinding it, I mean, till 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, and I did see a fish caught on Monday that I saw it weighed, that weighed 10 pound, 4 ounces.
Oh.
And, yeah, it was an absolute stud. And the guy Hayden caught it. He's our fish cleaner at 37. And he was down there, and he was fishing probably a couple hundred yards from us. Saw him catch that fish and went over there. And it was a 30 and a half inch fish that just ate a giant mullet. And I can't believe how fat this thing was, man. He was just a pig, and he hit the soft line. You know, it's like crazy. But I got a lot
of friends. They go, man, I don't like them soft nines. I said, man, I like them better than the Miradines. You know?
Yeah, they're amazing. When they're on them, they're on them. And when they're soft, Mickey, they stick better. Those fish hit them better.
It seems
they bite them harder.
Exactly.
Ooh, yes. You know, and I'll throw some hard baits. You know, Jay sent me some killer double Ds. I love those double Ds when it's a little bit dingy. Right. You know, and you got a lot of perch bite and stuff, and you can just crank them, cover a lot of ground. But sometime when it's, I'm just fishing a real tight area, I love my soft on. And I tell you something else caught a lot of fish this week was the grass walker. The trout support, we smoked them on that bait.
Really? You know, I've never thrown that lure. I don't have any trout support lures. Sound like I need to.
Well, it's a great bait to have in your quiver when it gets real grassy. And this is what happened on Tuesday. We had the wind switch, and it pushed the grass up against the shore. And we were catching these fish in, like, knee-deep or less. And now the first 50 yards of the shore has got scattered grass. And we're putting the grass walkers on and kind of rigging them weedless. And, man, they were thumping them, dude. We caught one that was right at 7-on-1. Just, they were thumping that thing. But, you know, it's just nice to have something that you're in the fish and you don't get shut down for the grass. Right. You know, how many times you've been in stuff, you try to throw something, you get about, you know, 3 foot and it's all grass.
I know, just grass up. That's so aggravating, that, man. And you know that you're throwing in fish and you can't keep your lure clean to get a bite, you know. That's aggravating.
No. Even trying to throw soft plastic, you know, it's so shallow, it's hard to throw something that jigs. You got to, you know, high roll it on top of a swim bait or something. You're still going to pick up the grass. But that's one of the baits that Tobin had sent me, that grass walker, and I'm so impressed with. When it's on, it's on. And I love it around the structure, and I love it in really grassy, shallow water. So that's something that you are to start fishing.
Is it like a soft plastic swim bait that you rig with?
It rigged with us up on top. It's a weird looking thing, and you wouldn't think a fish would eat it, but they just hate it. It's incredible. They got one that's silver, that's solid silver with silver flake, clear with solid silver, and it has a little black tail. It's just like a little tiny mullet, and you flip it on top. The one I really like is it's kind of a white color with silver flake.
Right.
And for some reason, they eat it. And you can pin it where the hook comes out the back a little bit where it's not, you know, not in the plastic when you don't have grass, or you can pin a little bit and just roll it right through the grass.
Yeah.
And it walks the dog up on top real pretty. You can put a hook with a weight in it. A lot of guys put a little belly weight to get it down.
Yeah,
but I like
weight.
It.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And I was throwing a floating corky before that. I was trying to throw that floating corky, and I'd get about 3 feet. You know, if I didn't catch
grass
a fish
up.
The first 3 feet, it would grass up. You know, but it was a neat bite. All my guys
were
over 70.
He's been working pretty good in Mansfield.
Yes, it does.
Lately,
I know.
You know, when they don't grass up, they got an area where they're not going to foul it up. There's been some pretty big fish caught off that floating corky.
You know, I watch how those guys fish it too. Like, for instance, they're coming up on an area where they think there's a fish and like maybe a mud hole or a little structure or something, and they'll fire it out there over it. And then when the corky hits the water, they raise the rod tip up so they don't get a lot of line slap. And then walk it about 3 feet up on top before you drop your rod tip. And, man, that's such an effective way to do it because you don't have a line laying in the water, and it looks like a little mullet jump. He's scooting across the top. So it's a real good technique when you first throw it out.
That's funny you brought that line slap up because, you know, everybody thinks I'm crazy. When it's calm, on those calm days, man, I try not to do that where you're, especially with braided line, the noise it makes slapping back on that water when you're picking it up and dropping it back down makes a difference.
Makes a big difference. And we're fishing that gin clear, alcohol clear water. God
I bet after that cold front, y'all's water, you can read the newspaper on the bottom.
It's stupid how many fish I'm seeing. So I'll in this fog, I'm trying to keep the boat up real tight with my people. So I'll get back in the boat, and I run the trolling motor and power pole down within, you know, 100 yards of them. And if I hear a boat, I get real tight on them. And I stay in the boat when it's really foggy. I don't get out there until I feel my guys are safe, you know.
Right.
But, sometime, Mickey, I'll let them get out ahead of me, and I'll hit the power pole button. And when I ease that with the trolling motor, I push fish. And that's so cool to see when that clear water. You push them, and here's a big old black log running across
the
boat.
Oh, you'll see them wake up.
Yeah, you know, and you go, man, we just walked right. We walked right by that fish. You know, those guys walked right by that fish. And I'm behind it, and just realize you don't catch every one you walk through.
No, you don't. I mean, if you did, we wouldn't have any left.
But it was cool. Really, really good.
But you know, I used to watch it, you know, I'd pay attention to that, like when you'd find a gill net or something back in the day when we had all those big trout roaming our flats, and all those big fish that seemed to strike a net, they'd be in little clusters of 3 to 5 fish.
That's it. That's wolf packs.
Maybe, you know, 6 or 8, 10 yards out from that, another little group of them had hit. It's they all kind of move together, but they're not in a school like, you know, little fish tighten up, you know, in big schools. But those big fish, they're just like in a little pod sweeping a flat. And, it's just strange how, now when they pull out deep, it's different. All those big fish seem to come together when they'd roll out deep and get off the shorelines. They'd been, you might have a school of 50 to 80 trout, and all of them are like seven pounds and up in one pile. But when they get in the flats, they kind of spread out.
I think it's like a wolf pack. I think they, I think they get in a pack. They can run stuff down. They kind of spread out, kind of just like a dolphin does, pin stuff down. I think they're trying to pin the bait down like that.
Exactly.
You know? But I've seen the same thing. You know, back in the old days where we'd stand on our console, dry with our foot in air clear water, we'd see those big black balls of trout, you know, in 5 or 6 foot of water. And that's what we did, you know, on the King Ranch. When we could drive down the bank on the King Ranch, you could see those big black walleye, especially in the summer on the white sand. You could see them easy. But, you know, and that's the same thing with our redfish. We used to have these giant, giant schools of reds. I mean, several hundred. And now they've been run through so much. When you get maybe one big ball of them, then they're all little tiny schools of like 35 or 40 fish. It's a little bit different now. You know, they just seem like they're not.
Oh, I remember days coming down there fishing redfish tournaments and, I mean, we'd clear the causeway, and I'd go to looking, you know.
Solid fish.
Running south. And I remember I used to always find, you know, a big herd out there. Remember that pole that had a cone on it, one of those traffic cones?
That's been there forever. Man. Yeah.
Me and Blaine made a living off that school of reds one weekend until the boats got us, and it busted them all up. When we first found that school pre-fishing, there had to be 500 to 1,000 of them all just crammed together. And we caught two out of there, and they were both over 8. And I said, man, this is what we want. Let's leave. So we just left. And, yeah, those fish used to get real tight down there.
Really. And it the same thing, you know, we have a school that we're 27, then that school will all be 30 to 33 or something.
Right.
You know? And it was so funny because you could just – everybody, I'd run into them. I'd see the big ruffle, and the first one I'd just buffalo hunt, where I just run right in the middle of everybody cast and everybody hook up.
Buffalo,
you know, it was just like running the herd and shoot. You know,
that's it.
And we'd all,
hey, John Wayne, man, just slingshot in, cut the key off, and slide into them.
And then the next time you fired the boat up, they'd ruffle again. You see them again, and then this time I'd work them with the trolling motor. I'd make them ruffle and see which way they're going, then I'd ease around the trolling motor and do it right. You know, And then Sheik and I would always get on him. Sheik and I would get on him.
I was just fixing to bring his name up because that's the way he did it too.
Boy. Oh, we would get between him with the trolling motors.
Redfish rodeo.
We would rodeo him until my guys said, uncle, we're done.
Let me knock this break out and I'll come back. We'll talk some more about rodeo and redfish, buddy.
All right.
Well, folks, if you're going fishing, well, don't. Not till you've been to the 50th annual Houston Fishing Show. That's February 12th through the 16th. It's going to be held at the George R. Brown Convention Center. We're talking everything for fishermen. All the new rods, reels, and lures. There'll be factory reps there to help you with any choices you want to make. And guides from Alaska to South America, well, all on display, booking trips and dozens of fully rigged boats, hundreds of kayaks, and don't forget about their clinics by expert fishermen. That's covering salt and fresh water daily. And a kids' clinic on Saturday and Sunday. You don't want to miss that. Get the kids out for that. They'll leave the George R. Brown with a lot of good products. So if you love to fish or just want to learn about fishing, don't miss the 50th Annual Houston Fishing Show, February 12th through the 16th at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Go to HoustonFishingShow.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Bull & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, it's 6:18 here in the Bayou City. All right, Cliff, we're back, buddy. We were rounding up redfish, and I think, have we lost him? Yeah, call him back. I don't hear anything. He may appear to still be there, but he's not. Yeah, we used to, that was fun. Blaine and I used to do a lot of that together in the afternoons after we'd limit out on trout, waiting in the mornings and everything. We'd go up by the river mouth and the top of Trinity Bay, where the Trinity River comes out, and all that pocket area back there. There used to be just so many huge herds and mega schools of reds swimming around on top. Are you there, Cliff?
Buddy, I'm here.
There we go.
I'm here. I'm good. I all of a sudden just went blank. The whole screen just cut off. I guess it's
that's all
I get
right.
Dropped a lot
back
out here on the island. You know, it's crazy how much time we get up.
Well. No, herding those reds, man, that was a lot of fun. That, you know, Blaine and I used to do that a lot back in the day. You know, we'd get our trout in the mornings wading and all that, and then we'd go up north and top end of the bay where there was just, I don't even know how many redfish there were back then. That was before all the stocking programs and all this other nonsense. Uh-huh. It was just pure born and bred reds in the wild, and I mean, there'd be football field size schools swimming around on top, and we didn't have trolling motors back then, and we'd just hit idle down one side of them, and I would the other, and just we call it the river mouth squeeze. We just kind of round them up and then cut the key off, and once you start catching them, it's like catching dolphin off shore. It's never ending, you know. Man, you're just reeling them in, flipping the boat. I think the limit was 5 back then. Up to 30 inches or whatever, and it was stupid. You had to carry an extra cooler just to put reds in on the way in every day.
No, we were so cocky. We pull in there and cast and hook one and put the rod in the holder and hook another one.
Oh yeah,
and looked like a porcupine. There's lines going everywhere, and you got rods in the holder wrapped around each other. Everybody's hooping and hollering trying to land two at one time. You know, that was kind of fun stuff. You tore up a lot of equipment, got a lot of line around your prop and stuff like that. But
redfish rodeo, man.
Redfish rodeo, musical chairs all
through the boat.
Yeah, how many times you seen a big old speckled trout? I mean, a big old stud right in the middle of those redfish, like a 30-something inch right in the middle of them.
We used to pull some gargantua trout out of the school of reds like that.
You know, what I think it is, too, is when they're going across the bottom herding like that, they're kicking up a bunch of stuff, and those trout are just picking it off like they are. You know, they're just kind of in there like a seagull hovering over something, picking out stuff the reds aren't eating. But you know, you take those reds going across the flat, they're eating everything that kicks up. It's just crazy.
Well, and that's, you know, that was another way we found them. When they weren't on top like that, we just looked for mud boils. And when I'm not talking mud puffs, you know, here and there. I'm talking about
boils.
Destroying 2 and 3 acres of water, just pure mud. And you'd see which way they were moving by the fresher, more clay-looking mud that was, you know, coming up in that clear water as they were moving a certain direction. Man, you had drum in there, you know, big old bull drum, 40 and 50-pound drum, along with your slot reds. The reds and the trout, will always be on the outside edges of that mud or in the front of it. Yep. And, man, whatever they're stirring up, everybody's eating and they're happy and relaxed. And, oh, my gosh, I don't know how many days that I would have 20, 30 trout over 7 pounds out of schools like that. Just
that's neat stuff. Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
We'd see him right in the middle of Rivera Channel, right in the center of the bay. You know, Sheik would be on one side, and I would see him down on the trolling motor, and I'd be on the other side. And it'd just be this beautiful green, emerald green water, and you'd have this big old mud stir right in the middle. And then eventually you kind of see which way, you look at the bank and watch the mud stir and see which way they're moving.
Right.
And get out in front of them and jig in front of them, you know. And it was either all reds or reds and trout, or it's a lot of times you didn't get a hit or something. You know, fishing plastic was a lot of drum. But that was the way we fish. You just don't see that much anymore. Mickey, it's crazy, you know.
It really is. The amount of drum and redfish we had in the bays during that era, not to mention the millions of trout, you know.
And that's what's so hard about me fishing Amazon right now. I try to go back there this weekend. The drum fishermen, man, just run over you, Mickey. I mean, they got their drum lines up shallow. When they go to run them, they'll run 10 feet from you.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I know they're making a living or thing. You know, it's just, they got to do what they got to do. But, man, you talk about killing your body a few times. So it's kind of hard to get back in a cove back in there to get away from them. So I'm moving around and hope there's days they're not in there. But it's amazing how many drum lines we have back in the back and in some of the areas, because we have a real healthy drum population here. And when you have, like you said a long time ago, when you have a lot of drum, you have a healthy bait system. And I think that's true.
You do. Well, that's all a trout is a drum. I mean, it's in the drum family. You got croaker, redfish, trout, and drum. They're all in the same family.
That's right. You know, it's so funny because the other day we're catching those big trout, Mickey, and one of my guys, he's from Matagorda and has a house over there and stuff. He's in his mid-70s, just a great fisherman. He actually watched the first flounder under a microscope, the egg split into two pieces. He's the first one to actually see that in a microscope. So he works a lot with CCA and stuff. Just a great fisherman. Well, he downsized on the soft down to that smaller one. And I never throw that small one. He was giving us a lesson in that clear water. It was that smallest one they make. And I was surprised he was able to hold those big. You know, these fish were 5 to 5, 6.5 pounds. And he was using a real limber rod. He backed way off in the drag, and I don't think he lost a fish. He caught 7 or 8 in a row like that on that small soft iron. But, you know, it was – and I was throwing the XL. I wasn't getting as many hits. But it's funny. A size does matter in this clear water. Man, that low profile and whatever he was doing there, and I think it's a lot of that larger bait in there. And when they saw, like, that little nacho, they had to have it, you know. I think that's what those fish are thinking, you know. God, that looks good.
I've caught some giant trout on small baits before. You know,
I noticed that a lot of people in Matagorda, like Charlie and those guys, they throw that smaller soft dine. I don't know why I don't throw it down here. I'm just afraid of those really small hooks that I shouldn't be. You know, they'll wad up like a grasper in the side of their mouth. But I'm just, you know, I've got this thing in my head where I need a big, strong hook.
Man, from the live baiters, I've seen so many giant trout caught over the years on live shrimp with like a little number 8 or number 10 treble hook.
I know it.
You know, we're scared throwing, you know, sixes.
And I got to get that in my head.
And I do too. I mean, they'd throw those live shrimp, free shrimp, them on the jetties and catch those 9 and 10 pound trout with them. You know,
I heard a guy tell me that. He said the whole trick is, he says, you keep the fish's head down, never let him open his mouth, and try to net him before he opens his mouth. He said they would do the same thing on the jetties, Mickey, and use that little bitty hook with the shrimp. And then the guy says if he comes out of the water and you pull on him, the hook's going to come out. But if you can get him right at the top of his mouth closed, you'll get him. And it's amazing how many fish they caught with that.
Well, and a lot of times those big fish, that little treble hook, it'll hang them right in the corner of their mouth, and there's no getting it out.
Part.
Boy, you hook them right there in that corner of that jaw, just on the inside of it. That hook's not coming out.
Well, look at what we've done with lead heads. We've gone with the shorter shank, the smaller hook, and it's just like it just sticks right in the corner of the mouth.
I've always been a big time advocate of short shank jig head hooks.
Yes, me too.
Long ones. You know, the reason I wouldn't use the long ones, we did lose a lot of fish on them, but the way we work our baits, we'd always flip the tail over the hook. You know, it hung back too far.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's when I went to the short shanks and the wide gaps, you know, in a 3-0 and a 4-0 hook. And I'm going, my gosh, we don't lose anything with these. We catch everything we hook.
That's a big difference. You know, Jay makes that little hook, too, that on his lead heads is so good.
Right.
Jay's got a great lead head. But, you know, what's also, you got to have a little longer shank when you fish a swim bait. You put a short shank on some of these longer swim baits, it rolls on you. You got to have a longer shank on the hook just for a keel to make it swim right. So that's the only time I use a little bit longer when I'm fishing a little bit bigger swim bait, just so it doesn't roll. I don't ever want my swim bait to roll. I want it to swim, you know?
Got you.
And so,
I'm with you. That's all good points to make. You know, it just depends on the soft plastic you're using, what type of hook you use. And you know what a little John man I am, and that wide gap 3-0 and 4-0 hook. I'll go to the 4-0 hook if I'm catching a lot of redfish or some really big fish. But most of the time, that 3-0 has always done the job for me. Mm-hmm. And that way and plus, you know, heavy gauge, not no little wire hook. I remember Paul Brown came out with some of those gold hooks, and we used to use them a lot. But the wire was too thin on them. They were great for trout, but when you're getting redfish, you're straightening them out like crazy. You know, redfish anyway, the way they twist and turn and go deep on you, and they would bend those hooks real easily.
You know, it's just funny how we went through all those different shapes of the lead head, went to the round gumballs, went to the pyramid shapes and all that stuff, you know, and it seems like everybody's going back to a lot of guys going back to that gumball.
Man, you know, I like the way it pulls through the water, the resistance you get on it. You're able to keep slack out of your line better, it seems like. You can feel better with it. I don't know what it is, but it displaces more water when you're pulling it through the water. I don't know whether it makes some bubbles that we don't see.
Look at the difference in the size of the plastic, too, Mickey. So I throw that XL Little John, and then sometimes they don't want it. They want the same color in a small one. And if you put it, the sink rate is so much different on that small one, I don't get it. It goes down to the bottom like a rock, and it stays on the bottom when you twitch it. The XL's better when I'm fishing higher structure when the fish are suspended because I'm flipping up in the strike zone. But when they're dredging on the bottom when it's cold, that Little John, that regular Little John, just smokes them, man.
Yeah.
And I don't get how that bait catches fish, but it does. It's just
I remember when Mirlure first sent us those, and I get my box in. I'm going, man, what are these? They look like suppositories. I'm going, oh, this is the Little John. So the first day I went fishing after I got that, I put a purple one on because, you know, I'm kind of, you know, psycho for purple anyway. And because fish like them, I like them. But I put that on the first cast I ever made with a purple Little John. I think I caught like a 5 or 6 pound trout with it. And I hadn't looked bad. Yeah. Then I started dipping that white tail, that tip on them. And, boy, it really went crazy.
Oh, I know it, man. I just can't believe how well that bait works.
Well, that all goes back to my old bass fishing days when I used to bass fish a lot in the spring, and when those fish would get off spinner baits and all the other stuff we'd use, man, we'd start worm fishing. And that cream worm, that purple cream worm with a white tail on it, oh, my God.
I remember that one. Yeah.
Oh, God, Lord have mercy.
And the grape worm. I remember that. The old bass fishing, they had a pack of those grape worms that smelt like grapes, you know?
Yeah.
It was like three to a pack, you folks smelled like grapes, and those bass ate them up, you know? But when I was bass fishing, Mickey, I didn't have all that high-tech stuff. That was many years ago, then, you know, since I've bass fished in Mexico.
Oh, this is back when we were throwing the pistol grip rods, remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, man, your wrist and your arm would hurt so bad at the end of the day after catching fish all day with them.
The first time I fished with Alan Warren on Fishing Texas before Keith took it over,
he shows
up with all these pistol grip rods. And I pulled him the giant school of reds. They're all like 33 to 35 with that pistol grip. At the end of the day, his wrist was hurting, buddy. He was hurting.
I bet.
You know?
Yeah.
I remember those
rebar. And then they came out with a new one before graphite. They had a boron rod. Boy, that was a tense whisker. Remember the borons we fished with?
Yeah, I sure do.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Golly. Now they're flipping. They got flipping sticks. They got everything for bass fishing now. These guys have just got all kind of high-tech stuff.
I mean, they got a stick for every lure. I mean, it's... Well, look at their boats. They got like 20 rods laid out with a different lure on every one of them. I'm going, man.
I always look at that though. How don't you not step on those rods?
They don't, though. Stuff on,
they don't and step on them.
Especially as, man, they put on, when the camera's on them, they're all this footwork on the bow and all that. I just stand still and reel it in. I mean, look at all this. It's pretty entertaining, I guess. Let me knock this break out, Cliff. Be right back.
All right, Mickey.
All right, Bo. Dog. All right. Well, folks, if you're going fishing, well, don't. Not till you've been to the 50th annual Houston Fishing Show. That's coming up February 12th through the 16th at the George R. Brown Convention Center. And, folks, we're talking everything for fishermen. All the new rods, reels, and lures. Factory reps there, they'll be on hand to show you their product. And guides from Alaska to South America booking trips. And dozens of fully rigged boats and hundreds of kayaks. And check out all the clinics by expert fishermen every day covering salt and fresh water. And don't forget about their special kids clinic on Saturday and Sunday. That's always a big hit. Get the kids out of the house, take them in, and have them check it out. So if you love to fish or just want to learn more about fishing, don't miss the 50th Annual Houston Fishing Show. That's February 12th to the 16th at George R. Brown. Check it out at HoustonFishingShow.com. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, it is 6:38 here in the Bayou City. All right, Cliff, we are back, my friend.
All right, buddy.
All right, man. Where were
I was saying about you. we're talking about equipment. You know, I sit there sometime and think about what is our trout boat and everything going to look like now 10 years from now? I mean, think of where we're going right now, Mickey. I mean, just picture it in your mind. It's going to have a drone thing where your drone goes out in front of you, finds a fish. You know, it's going to have all this fish finders and electronics, and it's going to be about $250,000, you know, for your bay boat. Yeah, it's going to be about $8 a gallon, that. You know?
Some of these guys in these tournaments are running $250,000 boats, man. That's crazy, isn't it?
I saw two boats come up.
You have to win a lot.
Yeah, I win a lot. I saw two boats that were like 22, 23, 24 foot with 500s on them. You know, just like, wow. You know, I talked to this one guy. He was running the Sims with twin engines on it last year, and he said that he switched to the single engine 500 because he wasn't getting up shallow enough with those twins. But he's still running, you know, God, over 100 miles an hour in that boat, which is just nuts, Mickey. Wow.
You think it'd get shallower with twins than it would with single?
I don't know. He said he just dug in. He said, well, I dug in too much on the takeoff. I was talking to him at the dock, and he had one of those brand new 500 Mercuries on there, and what a beast. God, man. I got that new 400 10-cylinder in the gas mileage is stupid good, Mickey. I can't believe how much
you really like it.
Yes, I was running that Verado 350, and I'm getting around 3.5 miles a gallon. I'm getting around four and a half miles a gallon this engine, and I'm only having to run 4,000 RPMs, which is really helps me.
Yes.
And everybody gives me a hard time, says, yeah, Cliff, you're just the same like all you old guys. It says, you get this big motor, you still run 40 miles an hour. So it's true, you know.
Well, those Verados weren't made for fuel economy.
No, they were such a good engine, though. I got 900 hours and never missed a beat, you know.
Crazy. Yeah. But so you went up 50 horsepower, and you're getting way better gas mileage.
That's it's cool. Just stupid how. And I'm getting no shallower. The lower unit is
Just think if we really had good fuel to run nowadays.
Oh, yeah, with all that garbage in it, man.
Yeah.
God.
Just think if we could go back to the old days with the really good fuels, how unbelievable, you know, economy and performance would be. It'd be crazy.
Well, you can only find the unleaded stuff. I think Marker 37 has it, but very few people have the real unleaded stuff.
Talk about
stuff.
The ethanol-free?
Ethanol-free, whatever that stuff is. Ethanol-free, yeah. But I'm always having to run that 93 octane in these beasts of mine, you know. But see, the lower unit is what's so crazy about this new motor. The lower unit is 2 inches shorter, and my hole shock is better, and I'm getting up shallower with that bigger motor. Of course, a lot of it is power. I mean, I can eat a hole in the mud. I mean, you know, I'm coming out of there. You know,
I've waded off into a few of them burnout holes now.
Yeah, burnout holes. I have to.
You know, that was a hell of a stingray to leave a hole like that.
But yeah, I've seen a lot of those, man. That was a boat hole. You know, we've been having these really low tides, Mickey, and I love looking at these prop runs, and some of them are so close to the rocks. Like, the tide will drop out, and you'll see a clump of rocks, and you'll see a trail, like, 6 inches right by that rock. Like, you lucky dog. You lucky dog, man. And see, there's so many of these rocks the size of a coffee can, you know, that just knock people out. They think that all these big clusters of rocks are on the GPS. They're not. The big clusters are. The little ones aren't. You gotta, and I tell everybody, I says, if you want to really learn that bay, drop that jack plate all the way down to the bottom and putt you a track, and then do it again in about a 4 or 5 foot wide area. Then run that sucker. You know, if you're not familiar with the area, just take a half a day and putt you some tracks. And that way, if you bump a rock, you know it's there. You know, you move over 10 feet. But I like these guys that just want to blow through these areas they don't know and don't see nothing on GPS, and bam, they get one. You know?
I remember wading the mouth of Alazan at one time, all them little bitty rocks all over the bottom. I said, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So these are ankle breakers. Boy, Blaine and I got on some monsters there one day pre-fishing for a tournament. Man, that was good stuff. I don't know how far out we walked out into the bay on those rocks. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. That's good stuff. You know, so something else changed.
Cannonball rocks, you know.
Yeah, we're getting new structure in the Upper Laguna Madre, and the reason is they open up Packery.
Yeah, you got that clusters. Fresh Gulf water coming in, that good stuff, man.
And so now the flats along Packery have clusters of oysters that are growing every year, and they're getting bigger and bigger.
Yes,
and people
sir.
Are hitting them with their boats. Said, man, I ran through there last year, didn't hit nothing. Now I'm hitting oysters. I said, yes. I said, look at the low tide now, how big the clusters of oysters are getting out along the bayfront.
Sticking up off the bottom, man.
Yeah, so you really got to watch. Just because you ran that flat 2 years ago don't mean you're going to run it now. Because the oysters have gotten bigger, and the areas are a lot longer. And that's only about 3 or 4 miles from the bridge. Once you get 3 or 4 miles away from the bridge, the salinity level comes back up. You don't have the oysters. But around the bridge right now, things have changed, you know, and for the good. It's all good, you know.
Well, how bad did the fish take it on the chin from the fishermen with that cold weather? Did they pile up in that Packery and all down through there?
Stack
up in them canals and everything?
Yeah, they did. They did, and they shut a lot of it down. And it was,
that's good.
It was so brutally cold, Mickey. There was nobody out there. Chill factor's like 15 degrees. I think I was the only idiot out there on Monday and Tuesday. I never saw another boat anywhere in that. It was stupid. You know, it was just too cold. Everybody kind of popped out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, they talk about these big trout fishermen, and I love the cold weather. And it's, you know, they go, well, I'll just wait till the sun comes out. Well, sometime you miss the bite, because those fish will gorge sometime in the coldest stuff. They feel threatened that they're not going to be able to eat. And at the beginning of that front, that water temperature's piling down like that, they're going to eat. And then they're going to lay around a little bit and sulk, you know, just with that. And so you can kind of miss the bite by waiting too long. And so, you know, you really got to fish the whole thing. You got to fish when it blows in all the way through it to try to get that one bite, that one, you know, that one major feed. You know, they're just not going to feed all the time on especially these big mullet. Just like that 10-4 that was caught. That fish was 30 and a half inches, had a 2-pound mullet in his stomach, and still ate a soft dine. You know, so he was in the gorging mode. He was doing it. He was getting everything he can to eat. You know.
Yep, sure was. These fish know way ahead of time, you know, when something like that's coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, even animals, they all react to it. And they forage. They'll stock up because they don't know when their next meal will be. They'll get so lethargic and everything, just lay up. If they got good food in them, you know, they hold their.
They can hold the. And it helps them deal with the cold, having something in their stomach, you know?
Exactly.
You know, it really helps them deal with it. And I was going to tell you, I got a really cool crew coming up this week. I got your buddy Chip, the golfer, professional golfer, coming Monday.
Yeah, Chipster, you know? Man. Great guy. Yeah, good fisherman,
he
too.
He is, man. He's coming. And then I got the Gunther brothers. I got Chris and Bobby coming, I think,
there's
on Wednesday.
There's some animals
30.
Right
They'll,
there.
There's yeah. some really good fishermen,
you got some
too,
animals
so.
Coming, buddy.
I don't know, man. I better be on my A game because these guys are really good. But, well, I always laugh when the Gunthers come because I just can't seem the last year to catch the right weather with them. It's always, you know, too warm, too windy. So hopefully this time I'll catch the right weather, because we get up real shallow and we fish for that one bite. So we'll see what happens. I'll either be a zero or a hero this week, because we're going shallow, man.
Well, we're coming off that new moon headed towards the full moon, so
yep.
Fish ought to be active. And, well, in the great warm-up, you know, we're going to be in the low 80s up here, so that'll put you in the mid to upper 80s down there.
I know it.
Well,
I'll take off
wind.
One layer. Instead of having four layers on, I'll have two layers
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Just bundle up for the morning ride and then peel them off as you go, buddy.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. That's exactly what I'm going to do, buddy.
I'm
excited about February. It's lining up good.
Did you see any monster deer killed right there at the end of the season? Any of your buddies?
No, sir, I didn't. No,
boy,
I had one of my
man Blaney them killed some big ones that last week. My God,
did they bigger than ones you sent me pictures of? Bigger than Blaine's deer?
No, they were all that. They were all big ones like that. You know, 150s and 160s.
Oh yeah.
You know, that rut was just, Blaine said that's the first time that he's ever got the real rut going during season, you know, at the end like that. It's usually after that is when it happens. You know,
well, I'm so glad that he got that deer. I'm so glad Blaine got that deer. He's been working at it for a long, you know how much work he put into that deer? That's so great.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and if Blaine pulls the trigger, it's going to be a good one. And I remember that one deer he called, what did he call that deer? He had a name for it. I mean, I saw it four or five times while I was hunting down there last year. Rudolph. He called him Rudolph.
Yeah.
And a guy was hunting with me. He said, man, why don't you shoot that big 10 right there? I said, man, that's Rudolph. That's Blaine's deer. I said, I got $100 says he shoots it the very end of the season. And he did the last day that Sunday evening, 15 minutes of shooting time left, and he dropped Rudolph.
So that was the deer that you had seen before.
Oh yeah, we watched him all season long.
And he got with the doe, and you said he came close to camp, but he was with that doe, and Blaine got him.
No, the deer he killed, nobody had seen that one. We were on the porch one evening, and it was so hot we didn't hunt, and I saw a doe shoot across the rifle range, and then big trail of dust, and I saw this big 10 shoot across. And it was a 150 class 10, and he was on that doe and stayed with it. Well, they'd been watching that same deer for a while. Nobody wanted to shoot it because it was really only about a four-year-old deer. And then this big 10 that Blaine shot showed up, I don't know, four days before the season was over. And Blaine passed on it. He took some hunters out that afternoon. He came back, and that deer came out on that doe again. He said, my gosh. He said that deer could make the book. So he went ahead and laid it down. It went 165. It's brow tines.
Oh,
if it
man.
Had decent brow tines, it'd busted 170. Right, it was a beautiful.
165 is a monster.
Beautiful buck.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Seven-year-old deer. It was time to die.
Yeah, it is. He's done his best. It's just like those. I tell people those giant trout. Okay, you catch a 35-inch trout. I wouldn't feel bad about skin mounting a 35-inch trout because she's already done what she's going to do. I mean, she's at the end of her life. You know.
I mean, yeah. When you get up so big on those trout, they've already run their course. They've spread their genetics for years. Yeah. And
you appreciate the people letting go to six or seven.
It's going to die of old age anyway.
Yes, they're probably not going to make the next winter.
Or, you know,
you hardly ever see them over
33,
34.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, I saw some pictures of some fish that were caught during that really cold weather and how beat up they were, Mickey, with all the leeches on their belly and their tails, you know, stuff. They've been laying in that mud, and their bellies are all red, and their gills are about halfway full of mud, and they pull out of that and start eating, you know.
But
the good thing about this last cold, we had cold before, Mickey, that kind of acclimated them to the weather, so we didn't get that big blast. But we lost a few mullet, but I hadn't saw very few trout dead. We saw a
few up here, but
nothing major.
Right home about, you know, just normal, you know.
Okay.
The stupid ones that were where they shouldn't have been, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Back lakes and, you know, where the tide dropped and they had a foot of water to ride out a freeze like that in, they're not going to make it. It's just going to get too cold.
You know, in that Packery hole that's 46 foot deep now under the bridge, they caught right before that freeze, they caught a snook that was 33 inches. And the snook's still around in the winter, just goes to show you they can hold in that deep.
If they've got deep cover, hole. They can get into and get underneath that thermocline, you know, get to the warmer water on the bottom and under the cold water on top. They can make it.
Mm-hmm. That I would surprise that all the snook didn't go south, but evidently they're staying here in the hole at Packery, so. And that's something we used to never see. You know, we're seeing more and more snook.
Well, you know, I noticed after the freezes, you know, that we went through, you know, in 83 and then the one in 89 and 90, those two, the fish remaining in the bays that we were able to catch were always out deep. We didn't have hardly any shoreline fish at all. You know, you'd have a few that'd pull in, but the ones that, you know, because I've always believed you got deep water trout and you got shallow water trout. You got some that like to live shallow and others that like to live deep.
Yeah, deep structure fish, you bet.
Yeah. And that's, you know, kind of like these bass, except, you know, they always pull into spawn. They go shallow to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
But our trout don't have to pull shallow to spawn. They can spawn over deep reefs and everything on tide exchanges.
Exactly. Just like the land cut. They used to spawn like crazy in the land cut till the barge traffic pushed them out of there. They would... you know, they had that big grass edge along the west side there, they had the current. They had everything they needed, the shell, and they could spawn in those potholes and sand and stuff in there. Then the barge traffic would just, you know, too much barge traffic. They didn't like it. Now they blow them through that land cut, you know, which puts more fish in Bath and quicker. It was in the old days, the trickle into Bath and from the south was a lot slower than it is now. Now they come in with a couple of weeks. We get 2 weeks of real strong southeast when those fish just dump through the cut and just fill up our system, you know, from the south. And they don't stay in there because you got, like the other day, was like 9 barges come through in one day. You know, they're just not going to hang around. They're
getting
moved around.
Can you imagine how awesome that would be down there if you had another giant pass? You know, you got the one at Mansfield, but if you had another one between Corpus and the land cut, can you imagine?
Like Yarborough. You know, Yarborough used to be open. They can't keep it open. They talked about opening it up, but they just can't keep it open
because
the way the
open,
Gulf Current is.
My gosh.
Oh, my. Yeah. That's crazy, man. But I'm so happy with Packery, Mickey. Man, Packery's just a game changer. It is. It just really helped our upper lagoon.
You know, since that's been opened up, I hadn't heard or seen anything about red tides or any of that anymore down there.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. Don't say that word, because every year I'm thinking, what happens in August? It gets real calm and the surf gets real flat and it starts in the surf. But I don't know what's going on now. We just hadn't had it. I don't miss it. I don't miss the brown tide. We have very little brown tide. Our water gets a little bit off in the back of Alazan, in the middle of the bay.
Y'all,
you know, when the water temperature gets close to 90. Yeah. And it's simply because the water temperature is high, just a bacteria thing. But it's not that real, real brown tide where it just turns brown all overnight. You know, we haven't had that. So.
Well, the only thing that hurt y'all was the dredging of that Rivera Channel. You know, it was messing y'all's water up. But I hadn't heard anything about brown or red tide in a while.
No, have you heard anything about this big front in February again? Like they were saying, I haven't heard nothing else about
it. Went away. I mean, that was supposed to be like on the 6th of February and all that. And we're going to have record highs probably next week.
I'm good with it.
Yeah. It's
good,
social media scares.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Man. But I'll let you know. I got some real good fishermen this week. I'll let you know how we do. If we don't catch them, it's on me because I got the fishermen. So if I don't find them, it's all on me.
Close to fish, they're going to catch them.
They're going to catch them. I know it.
All right, Cliff. Well, it's always fun talking to you, man. And good luck with your trips this week. If somebody wants to call you about getting in on one, how do they get a hold of you, man?
All right, Mickey. Thanks for having me on, buddy. I'm at area code 361-949-0707. Have a good week, Mickey.
Keep them big trout photos coming, brother.
All right, buddy.
Later, man. All right, that's Captain Cliff Webb down in Corpus. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. We'll be back in the morning bright and early, 4 a.m. right here at Sports Radio 610 KILT Houston.
Hey, it's Mark Schlereth of the Sinking Truth Podcast. The NFL playoffs are here, and I'll be breaking down every matchup as we get toward the big game. Join my co-host Mike Evans and I on the Sinking Truth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.